Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a big week for defense and offense in Washington. President Bush traveling to Capitol Hill to personally lobby for his detainee trials bill and tell Congress it's their job to protect the homeland. Former Secretary of State and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Colin Powell, charging, his words, that the world is beginning to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism. More reports of deep trouble in Iraq, more warnings on the state of the U.S. military, more calls for Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld to resign. Up next, On Point, we'll look at a week of war and politics with a former Secretary of Defense and Republican Senator William Cohen for his take on the battle over war and command. Joining me now in the studio is William Cohen. He served 18 years in the U.S. Senate as Republican Senator from Maine. In 1997, President Clinton crossed party lines and tapped Cohen to serve as Secretary of Defense, a post he held until 2001. Since retiring from public office, he started up a global consulting firm and picked up the pen with a vengeance. His latest book, just out, a thriller set in high security threats to the United States, is titled Dragonfire. We'll talk about the news and Dragonfire with William Cohen. Senator, Secretary, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you this morning, Tom.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, great to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Secretary.
Morning, Jack.
So here we go, and let's dive straight in. You sat where Donald Rumsfeld sits now, just a heck of a fury and flurry this week between parties and within the Republican Party over the war in Iraq, over the war on terror, over the military tribunals in particular. Let me ask you first, just bluntly, I don't know where you see it. You're a Republican who served a Democrat. Should Donald Rumsfeld stay or go?
Well, I've always taken the position that it's inappropriate for me to make a comment on my successor. It would appear to be self-serving, and I think it's just poor form. What I have said, and I believe this strongly to be the case, that it's that the buck stops at the Oval Office, that President Bush has indicated time and time again that his Secretary of Defense is carrying out the policies and he's satisfied with his performance of his duties, and that the Secretary of Defense serves at the pleasure of the President. Just a day or so ago, the President indicated in a public statement that whatever's taking place on the ground in Iraq, General Casey, as his man in Iraq as such, if he's wrong, he said, then I'm wrong. And I think the same thing applies as far as other cabinet members, particularly the Secretary of Defense. And so Secretary Rumsfeld has offered on at least two occasions to resign. The President has indicated he wants him to stay on. And so for those who are calling for Secretary Rumsfeld to step aside, changing personnel doesn't change policy. If the President wants to change policy, that's another issue. But I think that it really goes to the chain of command. The commander-in-chief's the one in charge, and that's where the criticism, if it's going to be directed, should go.
Well, let's look at that. I mean, we understand decorum. That's very clear. Yet the stakes are enormously high here. So high that former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who was right there in the heart of the Pentagon as well, has kind of broken that decorum this week with his letter to Senator John McCain, a fellow Republican, saying the world is beginning to doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism. Does there come a point at which even a former secretary, in your case Secretary of Defense, feels it incumbent to say something?
And if you about policy, I don't want to talk about personalities. I think Secretary Powell is correct in raising questions from his service as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, as well as former Secretary of State. I should make a full disclosure here. I'm a big supporter of John McCain. Mm-hmm. I was best man at his wedding.
He's blurbing your new book, Dragonfire, says an exhilarating tale.
Well, in fact, I incorporate some of his experience as the part of the major character in the novel itself. But I believe we should turn to people who have, in fact, been through this experience. And John McCain's a classic example of someone who has suffered greatly at the hands of an enemy and can tell you from personal experience that this is not something that the United States should be engaged in. I have enormous respect for Colin Powell. He's a personal friend, but nonetheless, it's important that we listen to people who have, at the very center of their concern, the welfare of our soldiers. We certainly don't want our soldiers ever being subjected to this kind of treatment. And I think there have to be rules established which set us clearly as a country that other countries can aspire to.
Okay, then let's look at policy. Exactly on that front, John McCain and Senator John Warner putting up a big roadblock in front of President Bush this week. The House seems ready to go with the president's plan on detainees and military tribunals. The Senate, clearly not. The vote in committee opposing offering an alternate view. William Cohen, Republican senator for many years, Secretary of Defense, which plan do you support? McCain's and Warner's or President Bush's?
I think I vindicated that I support the McCain-Warner approach and think that should prevail. Whether it will or not remains to be seen. But don't forget, John McCain has been out there long and hard on this issue of torture, having been a victim of it himself. I think he's in a better position to make a judgment on what information you can extract and how reliable it is on the one hand. And secondly, in terms of setting a moral standard, one of the things that we're running into by other countries is they continue to say that we're hypocritical. I think they can point to this and say that if we resort to any form of torture or extraordinary types of techniques, we can't really hold ourselves up as a model for many other countries.
President Bush has responded to Colin Powell's letter at a press conference yesterday. President Bush defended his detainee interrogation bill.
And there's all kinds of letters coming out. And today, by the way, active duty personnel in the Pentagon, the JAG, supported the concept that I have just outlined to you. This is an important program for the security of this country. And we want to work with Congress to make sure that the program can go forward. If there's not clarity, if there's ambiguity, if there's any doubt in our professionals' mind that they can conduct their operations in a legal way with support of the Congress, the program won't go forward and the American people will be endangered.
William Cohen, former Secretary of Defense, take us in here. You've said you're concerned about the president's plan because it might one day endanger American soldiers. If others put aside Geneva Convention, if they allow more coercion, maybe less clarity, if there were to be some kind of trial of U.S. personnel. What about on the front of effectiveness? The president here citing military attorneys saying they're with him, but they've spoken up against this kind of approach in the past. With your experience in the Pentagon, do you think the military wants this kind of interrogation and this kind of trial for detainees?
From my experience in the past, most of the professional military personnel want to see protections provided for those of our people who are captured and held against their will by foreign enemies, be they armed forces of another country or guerrillas and insurgents in this case. I also think that it's important that everybody speak out, including the moderate Arab states speaking out against the kind of vicious activities on the Bihar that are being conducted by those who are beheading people who are fighting in Iraq and elsewhere, that there seems to be silence on their part, and that's something that they have to learn to speak up and really condemn. And they haven't done that to date, but it's something that's going to be very important. But I don't think that we can really encourage techniques, interrogation techniques that could be used against our soldiers. I think that we would find that would come back to hurt us very badly.
Jack Beatty, here we've got Republicans, including our guest today, former U.S. Senator and Secretary of Defense William Cohen, at loggerheads, very, very high-profile loggerheads on the president's push on this front.
And understandably, and for the reason that Secretary Powell gave, our moral credibility is at stake here. We'd be the only nation in the world to opt out of the Geneva Convention number 3 on this, Article 3. You know, the administration wants a new standard, a standard that ban on behavior that, quote, would shock the conscience. They want to get out of the standard that would forbid banned on outrages upon personal dignity. And they say the reason is that's too vague. But experts on this point out that was left deliberately vague in the Geneva Convention because they didn't want to put a bright line there that would allow people to go up to it and tunnel under it and essentially begin to treat people like things or animals, that it's deliberately left vague so that people will feel they're at hazard if they go to anything that would outrage personal dignity. And it's unseemly, to put it minimally, to see a president of the United States holding out for something like this when everything we've heard about the utility of this kind of torture tells us it just doesn't work. And Iraq is full of examples of that. This whole campaign has been full of examples of that. You know, Justice Frankfurter put it very well. I think he really explained and put in a phrase what the administration is doing. They're seeking to afford brutality the cloak of law.
We're looking at a week in the news, from Donald Rumsfeld's troubles to GOP rebellion over treatment of detainees, with former Secretary of Defense and Republican U.S. Senator William Cohen. He's turned novelist as well. He's got a new one out, Dragonfire, about security threats to the United States. We'll look at that in a moment. William Cohen, last month you were a guest on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He asked you then about Don Rumsfeld. Let's listen to a clip of that.
Do you know the present Secretary of Defense? What's his... rhymes with Bumsfeld.
I do know Secretary Rumsfeld.
You do know Secretary. Does he ever call you and say, help? Has he mentioned anything about that?
Actually, periodically, a few of us who have served in that position are called to the Pentagon and consult with him, or at least give him some of our advice.
Could you do it more? Would there be a way to...
Well, I think it's up to Secretary Rumsfeld to...
That's my point. That's my point.
There it is on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, William Cohen. Here the secretary is. Can you imagine what it's like to be in his seat these days? I mean, he's got calls, of course, across party lines for him to resign. Within his party, you'd have to say lukewarm support. Generals, retired generals in particular, throwing all kinds of barbs his way. I mean, have you ever seen a Secretary of Defense under this much fire?
This is very unusual. Being Secretary of Defense, as I've indicated before, is a tough job in the best of times. And when you're in the middle of a war, particularly a controversial one in which the country is now almost completely polarized on the wisdom of being there, It becomes that much more difficult. But we have to point out Secretary Rumsfeld has devoted much of his life to public service in a variety of capacities. This happens to come at a time when it's perhaps the most challenging times facing our country right now with the kind of threats that are out there.
Does it make sense to just dig in with a particular Secretary of Defense? I mean, in history, presidents have changed Secretaries of Defense. Is it too disruptive to try that in the middle of a conflict?
Again, the real issue is, does the president want to change the Secretary of Defense because he wants a change in policy, or is this Secretary of Defense carrying out his policies in the way that the president strongly endorses?
Well, maybe that's the issue, but allow me just to ask, because there's been a lot of criticism, including from the right, the very hard right, the neocons, saying we have had the right policy and miserable execution. Doesn't that turn it back around? It's a president's policy, but the Pentagon's got to execute.
You know, that's why we have elections. Presidents get elected. They appoint their top cabinet people. They are then to be held accountable for those appointments. If someone does a great job, the president will get credit. If he's not doing a great job, the president will not get credit. And ultimately, the buck stops at the Oval Office. And so if people are disenchanted with the policy, they ought to go right to the Oval Office and say, Mr. President, this is our complaint.
A couple of years until that moment, just a few weeks until the midterms. We've got a lot of listeners who want to speak with you, Secretary Cohen. Let's begin to turn to them. From Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Dan is on the air. Hi, Dan.
Good day.
Good day, sir.
Good day. I just want to, number one, give you my bias. I don't consider this war to be a, quote, mistake or poor policy. I think it's illicit. It violates basic international law and values. That's number one.
Okay.
Not just a technical difference. Number two, when Mr. Powell, Secretary Powell, today or this week says that criticizes the position of the administration on interrogation and all that, it's far too late for Mr. Powell to play the pious man who worries about moral values and credibility. This man has been a front for this war for the first 6 years. We can all remember his United Nations speech and point by point by point.
Arguing, and making the case for what turned out to be a bum case for the weapons of mass destruction.
I do think that Mr. Powell knew exactly what he was saying and what he was doing. I do believe the other reports that the day after the 9/11 attacks, the White House was talking, the buzz in the White House was, we're going to attack Iraq, we're going to attack Iraq.
So what are you saying, Dan, that Colin Powell shouldn't be speaking up now if he's had a change of heart of mind, if he sees things?
He should admit his guilt in being part of the mechanism of selling this war to the American people and to the world. Admit that first, and to say now at this point, I do disagree. We should not be doing this to any prisoners.
Right. Dan, we've got it. William Cohen, how about it? The caller says, look, if Colin Powell wants to say anything, he should first come and make a clean breast about his original support. Of course, a lot of people could be put in that camp. Many Democrats voted for this war.
Well, as a matter of fact, I believe that Secretary Powell has stated on a number of occasions that it was perhaps the biggest mistake of his life in terms of making that speech based upon the information that was given to him.
Mm-hmm.
And had he known that it was out factual support and foundation, then he obviously never would have given it. So I don't think there's any question that he feels this has been a major mistake that was made. But give him credit for, during the time that he was there, he was constantly under fire, I think, from others for being, quote, too moderate, too reluctant. He is a reluctant warrior and was the one who was trying to bring the president in insisting that he go to the United Nations and not simply seek to go it alone. So, yes, he sees this as having been a big mistake in terms of the presentation he made based on the factual information that was given to him and presented to him as fact.
Jack, it's been an interesting week. ABC had its docudrama out, The Path to 9/11. Their sort of responsibility on another front being laid in no small part at Democrats' door, at the Clinton administration's feet. And we'll ask Bill Cohen what he thinks about that. But you know, the caller says, well, let's get responsibility straight first before we start wagging fingers.
Yeah, I mean, he's tough on Colin Powell. You know, the Powell testimony is interesting now because last week we got a release of the Senate Intelligence Committee report on pre-war intelligence about connections between Saddam and 9/11, and which they found none of, but that also included information about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And the source for some of the secretary's claims about, I believe the specific claim that he made was that the Iraqi government was training al-Qaeda people in the use of poison gas and in the use of chemical weapons. The source of that came from a man named al-Libi, who was in fact, he says, tortured, and who in his torture realized that he had to say that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and it had this connection with al-Qaeda. So he coughed up the idea of, yes, they're showing them how to use chemical weapons. And according to the CIA report, he didn't say biological weapons because he didn't know what they were. So that shows you what torture does. He just said this and this to get the people to stop beating him and our people. And then the Secretary of State uses this tainted information and false information in a major speech that is the disgrace of his life.
A short leap from a desperate detainee to testimony before the United Nations. William Cohen, what about rough treatment on detainees, rough to the point of torture? The president's keeping that line a little bit murky in his plan here. You've spoken to it on the issue of how it could come back and hit American troops one day. What about on the front of effectiveness? Do you believe that it's important, necessary, or unnecessary?
I listened to Senator McCain on this issue, and he and others who have been tortured will tell you that you'll say almost anything. At some point, you will break and say virtually whatever those who are torturing you want to hear. True or not. And I think that's the point to be taken into account here, that you have to question, number one, the morality, to be sure, but the effectiveness, which is most important. Colin Powell, I'm sure, did not know that this information that he was given was coming from someone who had been tortured. It's clear also in retrospect that the intelligence that was furnished to the policymakers are coming from single sources, which is almost never relied upon in terms of solid intelligence. We had someone called Curveball,
And this curveball was the single source for much of this information. It turned out to be a real Boston Red Sox curveball here in terms of bending the truth and breaking over the plate in a way that has brought great difficulty.
But if you had been Secretary of Defense on 9/11 and the day after, do you think you could have, would have resisted the, you know, break their knees if necessary impulse here? You know how big the threat seemed at the time.
Well, again, I don't put myself in a position of saying, well, here's what I would have done. But I can tell you that prior to 9/11, we looked at the situation with Saddam Hussein, and we concluded that even though we had favored regime change, that it should come from within. But we felt he was reasonably well contained and that he did not present an imminent threat to the United States. We watched him every day through the northern fly zones, southern fly zones. We monitored him constantly and felt that he did not pose a significant or imminent threat to us.
Do you believe that post 9/11 it was a mistake to go to Iraq or not?
That's a judgment that the president has made based on his own philosophy of preemptive action. I believe he was correct, certainly, to go into to Afghanistan. We decided that we were not going to go into Iraq unless we were had no choice. And if we were to go into Iraq, our plans were to have anywhere from 400,000 to 500,000 troops going in.
More than double, nearly triple what the president sent. Let's go to Columbia, South Carolina. Walt, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
We're well. What do you think, Walt?
Just please give me a second, Mr. Collin, Secretary of Defense, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I've supported Mr. Clinton both terms, both for his years. And I watched that 9/11, and the media always say the media was always towards the left. And I swear, some of them scenes, I was just crying, man.
You were watching the ABC docudrama, Path to 9/11?
Yes.
What were you crying about, Walt?
Because the administration... The scenes were when Mr. Clinton, cabinet, and Albright, all them scenes, some of them may be distorted, some of them may not, but it just seemed like Clinton administration, I'm a Democrat, and I swear I'm a Democrat to my heart, but they didn't want to do anything with Bin Laden. They didn't want to do anything at all. And I'm just mad up here where he's saying that, well, when Mr. Clinton was in office, we tried to do this. They didn't try to do anything. They didn't want to call... No problem. I'm just upset to be an American.
Well, we hear the outrage on that front, and you've watched ABC's docudrama, and here's your response to it. William Cohen, you've got a very angry Democrat here who says it looks to him, watching ABC, like Democrats, Clinton administration, maybe you, bumbled on the way to 9/11.
Well, let me recommend to the caller that you read the 9/11 Commission and not look so closely at the 9/11 docudrama, so-called, because the docudrama was filled with a good deal of fiction and less fact when it came to what the Clinton administration tried to do. There were several scenes, critical scenes, in that movie that were completely false. And they were known to be false, and they tried to exculpate themselves by saying, well, this is really just for entertainment. It's not really a true story. And so I think you have to go back and look at the facts. We did, in fact, try to get Bin Laden, and we failed.
What's the closest you came?
We missed when we tried to get him when he was in Afghanistan, and we had intelligence that he was going to be attending a meeting of like-minded terrorist groups. That was the solid intelligence that we had. The problem that we had is we had no way of getting at him except by long-range attacks. That meant hours of flight going in. Also passing over Pakistani territory at a time when Pakistan was on the edge of going to war with India. Now, we took a measure to eliminate that possibility that we would set off a war by flying missiles over Pakistani territory, being mistaken for being those coming from India, and thereby set off a major conflagration in the region. I sent General Joe Ralston, who was the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to meet with his counterpart in Pakistan to have dinner with him at a time when we were launching these missiles overhead to make sure that they understood, if they detected them, that they were ours and not an enemy's.
But on September 11th, 2001, when you watched those towers come down with the rest of us, saw the plane come down on the field in Pennsylvania, saw the Pentagon burning, did you have some feeling in your gut, oh, my God, we should have done more?
Oh, absolutely. There's no
like
question.
Like what?
that we should have taken bin Laden and the whole terrorism issue much more seriously as a major threat than this simply being one man or a small group of people. This evolved into a movement which didn't really become evident enough until the attacks that came against the embassies in East Africa. That's in response to that. That's when we went after him and tried to kill him. But that was the only time we really had a clear shot, what we felt was a clear shot at him.
Let's listen to Secretary of Defense today, Donald Rumsfeld. Here he was talking on the fifth anniversary of that day, 9/11, talking about why the country, in his view, must persevere in fighting the war on terror.
Many of the terrorists who have not been killed or captured are on the run. They have lost their sanctuary in Afghanistan. They've lost a supporter in Iraq that was paying the families of suicide bombers $25,000 each. But they still try every day to convince us to doubt our prospects, to distrust one another, and to believe that the battle against them cannot be won or is not worth the cost.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld on the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Senator, Secretary of Defense former William Cohen, what do you make of the war on terror, the strategy, and its success or lack thereof so far?
Well, it has not been successful to date. I think Secretary Rumsfeld is correct that whether you agree or disagree, wise or unwise to be where we are there. And how we leave...
When you say there, do you mean Iraq?
In Iraq.
So do you equate the war on terror with the conflict in Iraq?
I don't conflate the two. I think it has become certainly conflated with one now. That is part of it. But the war on terror, I don't like the phrase, frankly, and I've spoken about this on a number of occasions. I don't like the use of the word war against terror because it's not a war in a traditional sense that you have an identifiable enemy and that there's a terminal point. There is no real identifiable terminal point in this long twilight struggle against terrorism. And that means we're going to have to fight this for generations because you now have a flat earth. An earth that's been flattened by technology.
Tom Friedman's phrase, everything exactly. Accessible to everybody. Is war the wrong metaphor?
I do. I think it is. I think it's a long struggle against terrorism, and it's going to last generations. As long as a single individual or small groups of individuals have access to technology which can cause catastrophic harm, we're never going to see the end of this. What we have to do is to try to marginalize the extremists in our lives and in various countries to preserve our way of life. That's going to pose extraordinary challenges to all of us, and it's not going to end in Iraq or Iran. This is an issue which all of us are going to be concerned, whether you're talking about the cults, the Aum Shinrinko in Japan, or those who are doing the bombing, Al-Qaeda in the beaches of Bali, etc.
The very beginning of the week on NBC's Meet the Press, Vice President Dick Cheney was saying, Iraq may not have been involved in 9/11, but it had a history of a relationship with Al-Qaeda.
There are two totally different propositions here, and people have consistently tried to confuse them. And it's important, I think, that there's a third proposition as well, too, and that is Iraq's traditional position as a strong sponsor of terror.
Iraq, Al-Qaeda, terror, says Vice President Cheney. Of course, some primaries this week, a very much-watched one in Rhode Island, where moderate Republican Senator Lincoln Chafee bucked President Bush on tax cuts, on the war in Iraq, and won his party's nomination for re-election. Here's Lincoln Chafee.
I thank Rhode Island's Republicans, Independents, and disaffiliated Democrats who did turn out in record numbers to say yes to thoughtfulness. Yes to honesty. And yes to independence.
Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island, former Republican Senator and Secretary of Defense William Cohen is with us today. David's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I
agree with the Senator, Secretary Cohen, that we need to isolate the extremists and we need to isolate our own extremists. I guess I want to ask him a political question. Sorry about that noise.
It's the modern world. What's the question, David?
Do these this news from this week, the rebellion of the Republicans in the Senate and Lincoln Chafee's election, does this portend a return of the Republican Party to its traditional roots? How are we going to isolate these authoritarian extremists that seem to be in power now.
Senator Cohen, what do you make of that characterization? And what about a comeback for Republican moderates? Do you see it?
Well, I'm not sure about a comeback for moderates. I think it's a dwindling species in the Republican Party. From my own experience, when I first went to Washington, we used to have a group called the Wednesday Group, and we would each host a luncheon once a week and rotate. There were some 38 or so so-called Wednesday Group moderates that gathered each week. By the time I left, we were down to four. So not a great sign.
That's a small
but
number.
I served with Lincoln Chafee's father, John Chafee, who was a great warrior who fought at Guadalcanal in World War II and again in Korea. And his son is carrying on his legacy of being an independent-minded individual. But don't forget, he got elected with the strong support at the last moment coming from the administration.
Because they need and want that majority in the Senate.
They need to have a majority. And so I think that even though he may be unpalatable to the administration for the most part by virtue of his independence, they would prefer to have him than to have a strong advocate against them in the form of a Democratic member.
Let's take a call from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Jim, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, yeah. Senator.
Hello.
I don't know if you remember me, but I have a letter from you welcoming me to the main bars on the back of my office door.
Well,
to live in Presque Isle.
This guy sent out a few letters in his life, Jim.
Well, I spent a lot of time in Presque Isle, I must tell you.
Anyway, I'm just very pleased, and I've always been lamenting the decline in moderate Republicans, and for that matter, moderate Democrats, and I commend you for your courage in standing up. We need more thoughtful, independent, honest people. Maybe they can get the people who did the Condor Project on them.
Well, I'll tell you, what is most discouraging, I think, is what's happened to our political system. If you look back, when I was a young man growing up, if you couldn't be president, perhaps the highest honor you could achieve in politics would be a United States senator. And in those days, you left that office one of two ways. You either died in office or you were defeated. Mm. When I left in 1996, there were 13 of us who voluntarily retired. And some for family and health reasons, but others, I think at the core, was a growing disenchantment with the kind of poisonous partisanship that the political system is taking hold right now. So very discouraging. I'm hoping that we can see a revival of that kind of broad-based bipartisan spirit, especially when it comes to key issues, and I put that at the top of that, national security.
Let's go to Washington. Leo's calling. Hi, Leo. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Secretary Cohen, thank you for being on the show. My question is, what is the budgetary difference, really, between your administration, between Rumsfeld's administration right now? By how much has spending on defense increased in the Bush administration? And what are the legislative loopholes that enable the Republicans to turn the Department of Defense into such a giant contractor, which Washington residents can see, doling out massive contracts in Northern Virginia and in the area?
Leo, let us pick it up. First, Bill Cohen, do you agree with that characterization? Has it become something different than what it was in terms of spending, budgets, contracts?
It has. The budget, of course, has grown. And even as it's grown, if you read what's going on, especially with the Army is still in pretty desperate shape in terms of replenishing the equipment that it needs.
Explain that for us. We see those numbers and that fact. John Murtha making the case again this week in very loud terms, of course, long-term supporter of the military. Right. Why does that happen?
Well, it's happened. What you're seeing taking place with the budget, you're seeing what they call supplemental budgets being voted each year, and that is we can't predict what it's going to cost to be in Iraq year by year, so we'll come in with a supplemental budget. That supplemental budget's been running somewhere between $80 and $100 billion.
So how can the Army be short of anything?
That's just for current operations.
Yes.
That's not replenishing things.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
That's not dealing with what we call the bow wave that's coming. There are programs in the
Did you say bio as in biological?
No, bow wave. That means a big tidal wave is coming in terms of programs that have been planned that have not been funded.
I see.
And so these programs will either have to be cut or cut back. For example, you have the F-22 aircraft. You have the Joint Strike Fighter aircraft, both of them very expensive. But that takes us into the 21st century as far as high technology, mm-hmm. and that's what has been maintained our balance of power and dominance of the airspace by having the kind of aircraft that we do, F-15s, F-18s, F-16s. Well, these are old aircraft now, so you're going to replace them.
So is the budget reasonable, given the post-9/11 world we live in? Or do you see in its volume or in the way it's being used?
The question is not so much how much we're spending, but how we're spending it. What are the kinds of systems that we need for the future? What do we need to fight wars today? There's always a struggle between modernization and to hold on to the current capabilities. So can you modernize more quickly than is desired? This raises all kinds of issues. We want a leaner and certainly more lethal capability. Something as fast can be deployed very, very fast. Well, that's a transformational thing. Do you do it all at once, or do you gradually have that transformation?
What's your judgment about the way it is being done, has been done, how it's being spent?
I think that what we have to do is that we're going to have to spend more and not less, but we're going to have to spend it more wisely than perhaps we have in the past. That means personnel. We're real short on personnel in terms of the commitments we have. If you look at the number of forces that we have more and more missions with the same number of forces. They're being stretched very, very thin.
Do you agree with John Murtha on that front? Do you think
absolutely.
The military is being broken?
I think it's being stretched to the point where we have got to either increase it significantly or cut back on some of the missions that we're currently engaged with. I'm not sure that's a wise idea. What Secretary Rumsfeld is trying to do, which I think is maybe the only plausible course we have at this point, that is to change the tooth-to-tail ratio. Namely, we've got a very small tooth, that's the combat element, and we've got a large tail, which is your support element, and try to change that by factoring out having the private sector take up many of the administrative and support activities so that you can turn and take all of those in the support element, put them up front as combat personnel. That's what he is seeking to do, and it's something that has to be done.
Tooth-to-tail ratio, that's the kind of language that we can see how it would easily translate into thriller country.
Or to a dragon.
Or to a dragon. William Cohen is there as well with his thriller Dragonfire. In Myrtle Beach, Raymond's calling. Hi, Raymond. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're all right. What do you think, Raymond?
Okay. Well, first let me say, Senator, Secretary, I'll be glad when 2 years go by and you are on the ballot for the Republican nomination as president. I will vote for you, pick Oprah Winfrey, whoever you want to run with you.
Oprah Winfrey and William Cohen, there's the ticket.
And your book is going to do great if she can get to it. But anyway, seriously, England and Syria, those were two things we just saw where a terrorist plot was foiled, not because of the military, but because of intelligence in the part of the English bombing. And then intelligence coupled with diplomacy in the part of the Syrian bombing. And
brave Syrian soldiers who stood right up and turned away that attack.
Exactly. And it was diplomacy on that end. In a country where we have, like, razor-thin, relations with, because that embassy over there, as you know, is a fortress. Now, if we can put as much money, resources, and emphasis into diplomacy, and, I mean, I had lumps on my head, beating my, head against the wall about this, put this money in diplomacy and into intelligence, we cannot fight all these people, and the Pentagon has yet to foil any kind of attacks like this.
Raymond, we've got it. There's a ratio for us to look at. It's an important one. Bill Cohen, how about it? The ratio of sort of military deployment versus police-style intelligence deployment that we've used since 9/11, how do you judge it?
What I have said, and I continue to stress this, put Iraq aside for the moment. That's a big
Hard
deal
to do.
Put it aside.
Big bump in the rug.
But in terms of waging this long struggle or war, if you prefer, against terrorism, it will be fought primarily by police with greater intelligence, special forces, covert activity, and the military perhaps last of all. So I agree with the caller that we have to spend a great deal more time, effort, resources on building a better intelligence capability and then sharing that information vertically, certainly within any country, but also horizontally, so that we, the United States, have the benefit of what the Brits are doing, what the Syrians may be doing, what's taking place in Japan, India, Australia, all of the nations around the world who also face this threat of terrorism in their own countries. We need better intelligence and better good police work.
Jack Beatty, here's a longtime Republican senator and Secretary of Defense saying, hey, let's change the order of things. Let's move military down the list, police and intelligence up.
You still need to have the military power there. That's key. But in terms of dealing effectively with terrorism, you've got to have better intelligence. That raises other issues, I might add, that we haven't talked about, and that is how much of your privacy are you willing to give up in order to be safe?
Are you willing to give up more personally? Should Americans be willing to give up more?
I think we should, but I think we should do it intelligently, and we should do it in advance, thinking what are the trade-offs going to be in terms of how much of this technology, which can be a savior, can also be can enslave us. So we've got to make these judgments, and it's time that we debate this very, very thoroughly in advance before we find ourselves saying, why didn't we take and use this technology? It's a big trade-off, and it's one that I think we have to address.
Jack Beatty, here's a Republican talking about different points of emphasis. Do you see a shift coming? Do you see a kind of change in the array of American power brewing in this debate in Washington this week?
I don't. I mean, I think the president may get his way on the NSA wiretapping bill. He may not. Harry Reid, I see quoted this morning, says that he will filibuster one of the bills that Senator Specter has sponsored that would give the administration pretty much what it wants. So we don't know what's going to happen on that front. But the whole Bush thing is, whatever Clinton did, we're going to do the opposite. Clinton made police work and intelligence the center. And the people that tried to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993 are in jail because of that. Bush made war his emphasis, and Osama bin Laden is still at large. And Bush says in an interview this week with somebody from the Weekly Standard that getting bin Laden now, quote, is not a top priority. So war, it hasn't seemed to work in terms of getting the man who was our enemy. Maybe diplomacy and intelligence would have worked better.
So we're left to figure it out. Bill Cohen, Bill Clinton, loves your book, Dragon Fire, gripping tale. Stephen Kuntz, no mean thriller writer, calls it a dazzling geopolitical thriller. You've said that this book, and we've got a Secretary of Defense assassinated here, and we've got wild Russian and Chinese action and Chechens going on, and all kinds of steamy, quick action with
Israeli Mossad agents.
Yeah, you've got everything in here. Can we learn something in the way a former Secretary of Defense writes a thriller about how the United States ought to be protecting itself on the terror front?
There are a number of things that I think that hopefully we can learn. That is, it's a very human institution in terms of the Pentagon itself, that you take a Secretary of Defense who now has to contend with rivals who are seeking to protect territory and turf, strong personalities. That goes on in any institution, be it corporate America or the university system or in the political world. But to take those kinds of personalities and the issues they have to contend with, and then to put it in a broader perspective, there are people in the world who definitely want to see the United States' role in the world reduced and cut back. And what are their plottings and machinations? How would they go about doing this? And so what I've tried to do is to take real events, real threats, and put them through a prism of some of my own experiences and create what Graham Greene would call an entertainment to provide entertainment, but hopefully a flash of illumination on the key issues confronting us.
General Anthony Zinni, Tony Zinni, calls it a great read. He's been there. He ought to know. We had a caller who proposes a William Cohen, Oprah Winfrey ticket in 08. I don't know about that. Are you in the market? Who do you want or expect to see at the top of the GOP ticket? What do you see?
Well, in full disclosure, John McCain is my candidate. I was the best man at his wedding many years ago. We served together in the Senate. In many ways, he's responsible for my being Secretary of Defense.
Do you have any doubt he'll stand up and make a push for the nomination?
I don't have any doubt that he will do so. And whether he will get that nomination is a matter open right now, but he's being challenged by people perhaps like Rudy Giuliani and others. But he'll be a strong candidate. You have others here. Governor Romney is going to be in the mix, and he's a very competent, credible individual, and he'll make a pretty good run, too.
William Cohen, former Secretary of Defense, 1997 to 2001, longtime Republican senator from Maine, author of the thriller Dragonfire. It's out now. Secretary Cohen, Senator Cohen, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Jack, always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.